This is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Okay, great. So I've been asked to introduce myself for the sake of the radio broadcast, and I'll try and structure this introduction in a way that you might need to come in a little closer, I think, my dear. My voice is a little soft today. I'll try and structure it in a way that sort of lends context to the whole sort of story of, like, winter cropping. I found myself back in 2001 traveling across the country, actually sort of arranging seed swaps, as it was. But I found myself on the freeways of America for about 2 months. And I got back to Eugene in Oregon, where I was living at the time, and I felt totally poisoned by all the food I'd been eating and sitting in a van on the freeways of America for week after week. And I don't know if you're familiar of, like, when your diet goes completely askew and your life falls to pieces, and then you realize there comes a point where you've got to pull your act together, and you sort of think, God, it's going to take me months to get back into shape. And just as I got back to town, I was asked to care for someone who was very sick. I didn't know how to treat them, but what I did know is that I had access at that time to the very, very, very tiny winter cropping scene in the Northwest. And I knew that I could get good food into that person I was caring for. So I moved into the house and I started running the kitchen and preparing food for her. And within a week, I found my mental state, my being, completely transformed. A week of eating fresh food in the middle of winter, my sense of self-esteem, my level of mental suffering, my fuzziness, it was all gone. So that for me was a huge wake-up call. In fact, I continue to do work with people with brain injuries, and particularly getting food into them in the winters. And what you generally find is that you don't need to know what ails them, whether it's depression or some combination of some neuroleptic disorder or something. But if you can get fresh greens into people in the winter, it makes them feel a lot better. You can make it can work really quickly. You can get to fresh greens, and after 3 or 4 days, you can notice a palpable difference in your sense of how well you feel, and so on and so forth. So that got me started in winter cropping way back then, as I thought, wow, I've got to give this a go. And there was one tiny farm that was running a winter CSA, very small, tiny little biodynamic farm, and there was nothing else going. And as I began getting into that adventure, what I found fundamentally that it was more of a horticultural than an agricultural adventure, more of a gardening rather than a farming adventure. In fact, when Vida said to me, when I was talking about, oh, I'm a little bit worried about not knowing anything and I need to get someone to help me talk, and she said, my dear, it's just gardeners, not farmers. I thought, well, great, that's good. For example, back in, I think, the winter of 2013, we had a weather front come in Eugene that smashed all our previous records and that took us down to minus 10. That's not 10 degrees below freezing, that's 42 degrees below freezing. We'd never seen anything like it. I'd experienced temperatures in the low single digits, fours and fives, a couple of times. The first time I'd experienced temperatures at that level, I had a huge winter cropping scene going at the local food bank farm, and very much in the mode of someone who's a holistic sort of plant breeder, I thought, okay, great, a selection event, we call it. You know, and the weather comes in, kills 70% of your kales. The remaining 30% that you save seed on are cold hardy. You've got a population, you can move forward that way. And I thought it would be useful as an experiment to sort of sort the wheat from the chaff in terms of which varieties did well. And it basically destroyed my entire garden. So the next time a serious weather front came in, I was thinking about it very differently. How can I get my garden to survive? Some of you might have heard me talking just in the back there about the fact that one of the things that I really impress upon people is to be prepared for heavy weather. Have your closhing systems in place. Your plastic, the pieces you put together to make your closhes, maybe the rebar posts cut to the right sizes that we might stick the PVC over to put on the beds to move on in a hurry. Because it's no fun at 4 or 5 or 6 o'clock on a cold winter night having to get to the store and make your protection program. It really doesn't work. So I knew this cold weather front was coming in. I knew that it was going to be very cold, colder than perhaps anything I'd seen. I thought maybe, you know, zero. I wasn't thinking we'd go far as minus 10. And I got on the blower to the local gardening community. And I said, does anybody here have any experience of carrying food through those temperatures? What can I do? And I had a whole bunch of people from the Midwest go, we have, give up. Throw the towel in right now, don't even make the effort. And as far as their experience went, it was right. But what's singularly unique, for example, about heading into winters in that part of the world is that when the temperature goes down, it stays down. Whereas in climates like ours, when the temperature goes down, it comes back up. And what we find in winter cropping is that it's, yes, at certain temperature levels, you know, at freezing, you're going to lose all your fennels and they'll be ruined. So dig your fennel bulbs before freeze comes in. In the mid to low 20s, you start to see some of your, like your European and your Asian salad greens. I should say, no need to take notes. We've got been doing these talks for some years. And last year's talk we gave up in Oregon was about 2.5 hours. Our production team got it right for the first time in years. It's very high quality in terms of sound and so on and so forth. It's on my YouTube channel. It's Nick, as in Nicholas, and Routledge. And if you go to the, if you scan down to the winter cropping workshop for last year, you'll see references to texts you can read, online information, varietal information, and a whole bunch of other stuff more besides. So, what I found happening, for example, when that super cold weather front came in, was I thought, well, I'm not going to give up. So I set my protection protocol in place and eventually ended up being able to pull a tiny, we call them these small backyard greenhouses. Typically, you can, for between $450 and $500, you can set yourself up a rebar, a cattle fencing constructed greenhouse that's 30 feet long, 9 feet wide, 7 feet tall, that's incredibly robust and that can go through all weathers for the most part. Maybe at some juncture we can do a workshop on how to do that. It's very quick and easy to put up. And I took a greenhouse like that that was filled full of salad greens through minus 10 and brought everything out the other side just fine as a gardener. Now, a couple of things I was doing. I was very judiciously getting the snow off so that I could get sunshine into the greenhouse. One of the things you find you're wanting to do is you're wanting to get sunshine into the ground so that it can radiate it back at night, for example. That's a tactic that we use. I also had a tiny little space heater that I put on the extension cord into the greenhouse to take the edge off the heat. One of my cohorts in town, a gardener, has been growing food year-round for himself for years and years. He ended up pulling out a whole bunch of lawn furniture and other furniture into the garden and putting it around plants and throwing blankets over the furniture and his plants. You might think that's laughable, but he saved all his plants, where all our local farmers lost absolutely everything, and he was still eating fresh out of his garden for another 4 months. So what I'm getting at here is that gardening, as distinct from farming, affords us a flexibility, an elasticity, a freedom, a license to explore ecological tactics that work but that might not make economic sense. It's one of the reasons it's no mistake, for example, I find myself, like, for example, I've arrived in Sheep Ranch and I'm I've got a very strong incentive to get winter cropping learned as a tool because I've committed to feed the Mountain Ranch Food Bank pantry with fresh food this winter. Typically, their sources of fresh produce end in October. October's exactly when I expect our garden will come on. October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May is how long I tend to think of as the fall winter gardening season. That's 8 months. 8 months harvest season compared to the summer. So if you're wanting to feed yourself year round, fall and winter cropping is something that you want to look at. Again, this example is that we're sort of pushing the winter cropping motif hard right now around a food bank pantry. It's no mistake. It doesn't really make economic sense to be doing it. But in ecological terms, in social terms, in terms of caring for our neighborhood, in terms of caring for our community, in terms of caring for one another, in terms of caring about a future sustainable local culture that's sane, embedded in the local landscape, it really makes a lot of sense indeed. So, what you'll typically find, oh, I should say before I go on, the place I've landed is called Earth Abides. It's been a sort of a traditional, you could say a Catholic radical commune for the last 43 years. And one of the things myself and my cohorts are doing is in a sense is reframing it as a, certainly in terms of my terms, is as a, we might think of it as a lay Franciscan regenerative design institute or something. But we've got the food bank farm thing kicking on as well. I just did a little piece of art I brought along to sort of give to the group, but I thought I might sort of put it out. It's sort of in the Franciscan mode. It's Proverbs down here. It might be a little too religious for some of you, but I thought I might pass it along to whoever asked the best question. And if you're religious, act dumb. And if you're not, be brilliantly persuasive. So I'll just leave it there for you. Have a look. Make sure your fingers are clean. Okay. Oh, we'll put that one out. So we'll have these temperature thresholds. The winters I typically come out of, and I'm immediately going to turn this question around and ask you what your temperatures are locally, because I don't know. Typically, through the years, our average nighttime winter temperatures hover in the mid to high 30s. And then we get a lot of dips into the high 20s. Couple of times a winter, it wouldn't be uncommon to get into the low 20s. And then every 2 or 3 years we might have extended spells in the high to mid-teens. Rarely did we get down into single figures, and that minus 10 degree event was the only time that I've noted in that instance. So my sense is that, and typically we would have, when we get snow, typically it would hang around for between 2 and 5 days. Although within recent times, we're having snow hang around for longer on occasion. We're being hit by more in the way of erratic weather events. One of the things that we do as we begin to move into winter cropping is not just go for diversity's sake, but because it doesn't just give us a broad spectrum in terms of crop types and flavors and colors and everything else, but it also deepens our survivability. for example. Certain varieties we'll put in because we know they're incredibly rugged. Certain crop types we'll put in because we know they're incredibly rugged. And what that means is that as temperatures begin to drop, we can expect to see losses at different stages, particularly if we start to get temperatures going down and staying down. Typically, you'll find, like in those various temperature thresholds that I've been talking to about, the fennel you lose in your high 30s, for the most part, your high 20s, just about everything's fine. Once you get into your low 20s, your outside greens will begin to take a stumble. I'm just talking about one night of cold. Once you get into your high teens, you'll see some of your kales beginning to limp. Once you start to get into your low teens, you'll start to really lose some plants. And then once you get into single digits, that's when there can be some chaostrophe, madness, and mayhem involved. But what you'll find is that if a temperature just goes down for one night, most of the plants will do just about okay. By the second night, things can start to look a little winded. By the third night, you've basically got yourself a selection event going on that's really knocking the wind out of stuff. And by the fourth night, you'll generally see major casualties around a particular crop type. But typically, more often than not, I haven't been dealing with those sorts of dips that go down and stay down. Though you can also structure your garden, its hardiness to sort of account for that. So one of the things that we're often looking to do in terms of winter cropping is put in a diversity of hardiness across various crop types. Anybody have any idea which are the hardiest brassicas, for example, that we put in? Anybody got any ideas?
What's a brassica?
A brassica, well, in the family of the brassicas, I'm thinking them. Well, we'll talk for we'll talk mostly about the Brassica oleraceae family at this point, to keep it simple. That'll be cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, broccolis, kales, collards, schuberschmeltz, kohlrabi, that sort of stuff. Anybody got any idea what would be the hardiest of those? Yeah. You're right. Spot on. Yeah. You have some experience, perhaps, in this field, it seems. Oh, well, it's very good. One of the interesting things about Brussels sprouts is that their very structure sort of lends them and designs them to shed snow. Not only are they very hardy, but they're basically made to hang out. They're also actually one of the earliest of the brassicas that we'll seed. Typically, we'll be seeding them in May, for example. In this climate here, I would think May would we be when we'd be seeding our brassicas. And we rely very heavily on that family of brassicas. The kales, the collards, the cabbages, the four cabbages, the overwintering cabbages, the four broccolis, the overwintering broccolis, the four cauliflowers, the overwintering cauliflowers, because they have a combination of size, diversity, durability, hardiness, and so on and so forth, that make them the backbone of our winter cropping systems for the most part. I should also say that if you've tasted kales in the summer, you haven't eaten kales at the right time. You'll generally see most winter croppers dancing a big jig when the cold weather comes in, because the way plants defend themselves from the cold is by doing the plant equivalent of pumping themselves full of antifreeze, which is sugars. So everything sweetens up when the weather gets cold. There's a number of us who say, without irony, people who are experienced growing food year-round, is that the winter cropping season is the best of them all in terms of the flavors in the garden, and full of surprises. You know, cilantro is incredibly hardy. You can grow it outside through winters just fine. You brush against a cilantro plant in the middle of winter, it's like having salsa just come over you like a tsunami. It's a glorious experience. Okay, that's a quick initial download. I was just saying to Adil a little earlier that this is it's a vast topic to discuss, and there's only a way we're going to address a sort of a small fraction of it today. Perhaps this conversation might continue. There's a very significant story relating to crop and varietal selection, winter varieties, for example, that's essential to making these efforts a success. It just so happens that the Southern Willamette Valley that I come out of has been the de facto global center of kale diversity, both in Brassica oleracea and Brassica napus, for the last 2 to 3 decades. So if you thought you know kales, you ain't seen anything yet, I can assure you. One of the things I do is travel with an incredible diversity of kale seed. And I'm putting it all on my tables. I've got a really banging nursery scene ticking along right now. In about 4 weeks, I'm expecting to need to get a lot of those plants into the ground. And I don't think I'm going to have the ground for all those plants to go into. So at that point, for example, it would be a good time, if you're interested in winter cropping, for us to hook up and to make that happen. And maybe we could talk a little bit more about certain other specifics then. I put out a major Facebook. The winter cropping scene in the West is not, it's new here, but it's picking up steam all the way around the country, I think, where winter cropping can be done. I put out a major Facebook post to the Pacific Northwest and Winter Cropping Group a couple of days ago about the story on my nursery tables at the moment. One of the things I'd like to do is maybe, once this is all done, is get an email with that description, the link to the YouTube video, and a couple of other things to you, so you can get a little bit more of a sense of some of the more, I wouldn't say esoteric reaches of winter cropping, but essentially what we're trying to do with this effort in a place like this is develop an approach that draws down on the great strengths of, you know, genetics, seed, experience from other places, and localize it here. What I'm finding already is that coming in with a bunch of know-how about how to raise crops through temperatures that I think for the most part are on a par or maybe even a little colder to temperatures you have here. Was I right in that regard, in a sense?
Depends on the elevation.
It depends on the elevation, of course, yes.
So here, I haven't had any good experiences growing Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's because our weather is not cold enough.
So typically when we start people off on winter cropping, we'll tend to start people off on some of the crops that are less fussy. Cauliflowers and Brussels sprouts tend to be two of the fussiest. They really need a lot of balanced fertility for the most part. Okay.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
I have Swiss chard in my yard year round.
Yeah. That's and we'll talk a little bit about Swiss chard, which occupies a totally unique place in winter cropping systems and a very important one. So thank you for that reminder. So one of the reasons we tend to start people off on the leafy brassicas, like the kales and the collards, is because they're far more forgiving of timing snafus, fertility issues, unknowns relating to hardiness, and so on and so forth. If you get, for example, your timing, or you don't water a heading brassica right in the flats, for example, you can end up with a plant that either bolts prematurely or doesn't head up, or so on and so forth. If you don't have the fertility requirements right, even if you get your timing right, and so on and so forth. Was your leafy brassicas, and we've got an extraordinary degree of strength and diversity in our leafing brassicas, tend to be much easier to get started in terms of developing a winter garden. Again, I'll refer you to that Facebook post to see specifically what the tale is around the leafy brassicas. Oftentimes we'll encourage people to get started with some root vegetables, carrots and beets in particular. I seeded my carrots and beets these last 2 weeks. Typically I'll aim at a 1st of July sowing for them. Right now I've no understanding of what timing's going to be in this neck of the woods, but a good general rule is, if in doubt, go earlier rather than late. All you might lose, really, are your 4 brassicas coming on too soon. Like your 4 broccolis and your 4 maybe your 4 cabbages splitting if you get them in too early. But for the most part, it isn't going to hurt you to have big plants going into the winter. There's a sort of old gardener's adage that you don't want the plants too big going into the winter because they're more susceptible to damage, and you don't want them too small, and so on and so forth. Now, yeah, there are aspects to that that are true, but for the most part, the main challenge and effort is to get your plants big enough, headed into the winter, so that when things shut down and quieten down, everything's ready and primed for harvest. Particularly, you know, with your fall, you'll have a whole wave of fall crops, for example, that you'll roll into. I tend to think of the winter cropping season as 3 seasons, really. The fall, which I tend to think of as sort of October through December. The first part of the new year I tend to think of as January through March. And then the latter part of the season that I tend to think of as April through May. And we'll specifically have specific crop types that are coming on strong at those particular times. I don't know if you've ever been confronted by people saying, "What's your favourite vegetable?" Well, one of the things you definitely learn from winter cropping is your favourite vegetable is whatever you go into the field that January or February or March day and see whatever's glowing at you. That's what tends to come out of the field. Any more questions or leads before? Yeah.
What about soil? How do you prepare your beds?
Okay. I'm not going to get into an adventure on organic gardening, but what I would say is how it relates to winter cropping is that some of you a little earlier might have heard me say that the pros, I mean these are the big multinational dudes who might put you on a program of 20 different winter cabbages, each hybrid maturing every second week and so on and so forth. These are people who are really dialed in. They always talk about transplant dates, never seeding dates. Particularly as you get past the solstice. It's not like in the spring or the summer, where if you're a day or 2 or 3 days late or a week late or 2 weeks late on your seed or a month late on your seeding, you just seed again and everything catches up. Once you're the other side of the solstice, everything slows down. Every day lost is more than a day lost. It's very useful in terms of the fact that you don't really need to waste a lot of time thinking about re-sowing and cycling through and through a complicated seeding program. When it comes to winter cropping, basically, you got to hit those dates, and then those transplants have got to go into the ground. Sun won't wait on you. And then we get these plants into the ground. And typically the way it's worked in the Pacific Northwest is that we've moved those dates earlier through the years. And I don't know why. I experimented a lot with early sowing 15, 20 years ago in June, and it didn't work for me. So I moved everything up into the second 2 weeks of July. And in recent years, that has come back, so that now the vast majority of seeding of winter brassicas in the Pacific Northwest, other than the Brussels sprouts I was mentioning, tends to happen in the last 2 weeks of July. That's when we do most of that seeding.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us.